Hi, my name is Taco. I want to say shout out to all the raccoons on campus. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM on Burnaby.
Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Glad to hear it. My name's Jesse, and this is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University, on the very, very top of Burnaby Mountain, where we broadcast on the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Stolo, Catesy, Kwikwetlem, and other Coast Salish peoples. Today on the show, we've got I'm going to play the episode of Health Matters about gender-affirming care, given the protests and counter-protests surrounding the SOGI 123 curriculum and the, I'll just say it, absolute nonsense, people protesting because they don't like that their children get to hear about a diverse array of gender identities and sexualities. Anyway, we're going to hear that because it's very informative and shed some light on the issue. And we'll have some music, and we'll have maybe a spoken word excerpt or two from a collection I got down at the CJSF downtown studio archive place. And did I mention music? Yeah, we'll have some music. And that is where we are going to start, with an artist called Devin Parkin, who I did not know about until the Victory Square Block Party, which happened 3 weeks ago at this point, almost, Sunday, September 3rd at Victory Square, in collaboration with CITR. We live streamed that concert, and as we were doing so, I got to watch all the bands, as happens, and had never heard of Devin Parkin. And when he set up with his band, he had a very, very complex audio interface system with multiple cables, and there was some skepticism, but he came through and proved why he had all that stuff, and it sounded great. So we're going to hear the opening track off of his album Sit With Dirt. And yeah, enjoy it. It's fun. Here we go. Comes and Goes. Devin Parkin.
Thank you.
The Still Moon Arts Society presents the Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival. With water's wisdom as this year's theme, the festival enlivens the Renfrew Collingwood neighborhood by inviting local residents to engage with, learn about, and value local nature with events and workshops. From September 9th to 29th, come together as a community, build social connections and a sense of belonging while sharing skills and cultural traditions. For more information on the festival and to register for events, go to stillmoonarts.ca. Contribute to creating a stronger, healthier community at the Renfrew Ravine Moon Festival, September 9th to 29th.
To speak up, that was Swollen Ankles by Triton, former CJSFer. Used to do a show here as part of the ACID program. One of the things CJSF does is partner with local schools and other organizations to provide training and access to equipment and space on the radio to share voices that otherwise would not be on the radio. So if that sounds like you, if you would like to be on the radio, you can always pop by the station Well, you can pop by the station Monday to Friday, 10 to 5, and there will be a staff person here to introduce you to the space and the organization, or you can get in touch with our volunteer coordinator at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca. That's vol4cjsf@sfu.ca, for being the number 4. We've also got a meet and greet coming up next Thursday, the 28th, at 4 o'clock, 4 p.m. here at the station. If you want to get to know the programming department and the talk department, and just sort of get an idea for who else is interested in the kinds of things you might be interested in, or who might be available to collaborate, or someone you can learn from, or someone you can teach, or just if you just want to come hang out, please do so next Thursday, September 28th at 4 p.m. I'll mention it next week as well, but I'd like to give you a little bit of time in advance to plan so that you can be here. Oh, there will be food for free. Yeah. That's also an important thing to mention. Okay, so I mentioned I was going to be playing an episode of Health Matters, produced by Harris, and we're going to get that right away. And I wanted to play this because of the rallies yesterday, September 20th, in support of and against the inclusion of SOGI 123 curriculum. SOGI 123 is Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity. It's a resource package that is designed to help teachers and school administrators reduce discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in their curriculum. This curriculum is being protested under the guise of parental rights in a thinly veiled poor attempt to thinly veil homophobia and transphobia. And so there were lots of rallies. It does seem that there were many more people there in support of the curriculum than protesting, although of course it depends where you were, because these did happen all across the province and the country. And obviously there are different opinions, different places, but it does seem to be a pretty small minority of a vocal minority of folks who are against this curriculum. And so I wanted to just give you some more information. Hara speaks with a doctor who is involved in providing gender affirming care for youth and for people of all ages. So we'll get into that, and you can hear about the science and the benefits. Cool. Here we go.
Hey everyone, welcome to Health Matters. My name is Harris and I'm going to be your host today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I know this time of year can be quite hectic for a lot of people, whether you're in school or work. We're kind of nearing the end of 2022 now, so there are a lot of deadlines and assignments and things that need to be done before the year ends. So I appreciate you tuning in. We have a really important topic today, and that is of gender-affirming care. And gender-affirming care is something that it's getting a lot of attention in the media now, but I really wanted to raise more and more awareness about some of the challenges that it's facing in terms of healthcare support, access, and resources. And later in the episode, we're very fortunate to be joined by Dr. Seymour, who's a family physician who is really knowledgeable about gender-affirming care and provides some great insight into this topic. But I just wanted to introduce the conversation a little bit and to really highlight some of the issues that the country and the province are facing. For example, in British Columbia, it's estimated that there are about 46,000 people that could use access to some type of medical or surgical care in the form of gender affirmation, but only very few of these people eventually get the care and treatment that they need. This is because in British Columbia, there is already such an issue with family physicians. Whether you're just a patient looking for a refill on your blood pressure medication, even that can be a bit of a challenge nowadays. And I know the healthcare system is really trying to revamp things, but the point is that even for something that can be done really quickly, like a prescription refill, a lot of people are struggling when it comes to medical care that is a lot more nuanced and more complex in some ways and more deep and requires multiple conversations and a lot of decision making. A family physician that is knowledgeable about this area is really important, and a lot of people are struggling to get somebody that can provide them with that level of care and can walk them through this journey. And so something like gender affirming care, where a lot of physicians are not too well trained in this area, and that in itself limits the pool of who can help out, I can understand the frustration of a lot of individuals that are seeking this support. And that's why I really felt like this episode was necessary and needed, because the point is to increase our understanding, increase our awareness, and try to provide any type of resources that we can to people that are looking for additional support. And so today I have Dr. Seymour, who I've had the privilege to work with, and she is a phenomenal family physician out in Duncan. And opposed to my typical experience working with family physicians, she really has a focus on gender affirming care in her practice, and she does a phenomenal job at that. I've seen so many patients in her clinic that are really appreciative of how thoughtful and caring she is and how much attention she pays to even the small details. And that's something that I really took away from my time with her, is that a lot of people are going through many things, and with any type of health decision there comes a lot of anxiety and stress and even depression, and she's able to look at people in a holistic manner and address not only some of their more medical questions, but also she really looks at the mental health aspect of things and walks patients through that as well. And so we had an amazing conversation that I'm going to play for you right now about gender affirming care, changes that she would like to see in the healthcare system, and just some tips that she has for anybody listening. And so without further ado, I would like to play you guys the interview that I had with Dr. Seymour. I hope you can take away some of the gems that she had to share. Enjoy. Hi, everyone. I would like to introduce Dr. Patricia Seymour. She's a family physician working in Duncan on the island. I've had the privilege to work with Dr. Seymour last year, and it was such a phenomenal experience. She's exceptionally knowledgeable, very kind, very caring. All of her patients love her. And it was a really good time in Duncan, and I learned a ton. And today we have the honor of Dr. Seymour joining us. And so, Dr. Seymour, thank you so much for coming. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, thank you very much for having me. Well, as you said, yes, I'm a family doctor. I've worked in this community, Duncan, since 2008. I do full service, full scope family practice, which includes hospital rounds. And I became interested in gender affirming care around 2015, 2016, when my child came up to me as transgender. And that was the beginning of a great and evolving education.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that was another thing that I was hoping you could speak a little bit more on, is what, for the people who are not really familiar with the gender affirming care, can you explain that and what that entails?
Yeah. Gender affirming care really refers to care for transgender or gender diverse people, those who have a gender identity that does not align with so-called sex assigned at birth. And so gender affirming care is a growing specialty that allows people exploring gender to do so in a safe and accepting environment, and to access medical and social and legal services. So I would be doing mostly medical, but also a little bit of the social aspect of gender affirming care.
Right. And what do you think are some of like the challenges that you notice in your practice when it comes to gender affirming care? I feel like just off the top of my head, I think accessibility would be a big issue. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, accessibility is an issue. Certainly, the reason why I started doing this work was because when my child came out to me as transgender, a number of years ago, really the only place that we could access care at the time was, well, the hormone assessments, as they're called, was being provided by only one psychologist in Victoria, and I was not aware of any other assessors at the time. And then the actual hormone treatments were being provided through the gender clinic in Vancouver. So since then, there's been quite an evolution or an increase in the numbers of particularly primary care practitioners who do gender affirming care, such as myself.
Mm-hmm.
But along with that, which is a great thing, along with that, though, there have been an explosion of numbers as I think younger people start to understand that they are able to come out and to seek help. So access is still a challenge for sure. And I'm about the only one in my area that does this sort of work. So that makes it a little bit challenging.
For sure. And if there is like somebody who's listening or somebody who's thinking about going through that process and they don't know where to start, what do you suggest for them? Like what is like the first step that they can take?
Well, there is an amazing organization called TransCare BC, mm-hmm. and they've got a very comprehensive website. TransCare BC has been functioning for many years, actually, and has been growing in terms of size and influence, and is an organization that really advocates for access and for gender-affirming care. So they can actually help people navigate the system, find family doctors or primary care practitioners who offer primary care to those mm-hmm. who are gender diverse, and also can help them find hormone assessments and surgical assessments. So TransCare BC is an amazing resource. The World Professional Association for Transgender Health, which is a big mouthful, WPATH, also has incredible information on their website,
right.
and have just published a Standards of Care, a new edition
mm-hmm.
of the Standards of Care. So they're excellent. And then for youth, if you visit the Gender Clinic, BC Children's Hospital Gender Clinic, there's an enormous range of resources there as well.
Right.
So that would be a good place to start.
Yeah. And do you still find like it's really difficult with wait times and finding surgeons that can provide this level of care, or has that been something that's improving? What have you noticed is the trend at the moment?
Well, depending on the service that is being sought, yes, the wait times can be long. Surgery wait times, for example, depending on the surgery, for bottom surgeries, as they're called, can be upwards of 18 months to 2 years.
Mm.
But there, having said that, there is now a surgical center in Vancouver doing bottom surgeries and chest surgeries, and they opened their doors in September of 2019. Prior to that, people had to travel out of country, out of province, in order to access care. So at least the surgical care is now close to home or closer to home, yeah. even though the wait times are long. And chest surgeries, yes, the wait times are long, but compared to those individuals seeking, for example, breast reduction surgeries, which can sometimes take 3 to 4 years to access, access to chest surgeries for trans individuals sometimes as short as 8 to 10 months, and
wow.
Up to 18 months. So
right.
yes, long wait times, but thanks to the efforts of organizations like TransCare BC and increasing access to services, it's not terrible.
Yeah. And if there are, like, say somebody's in a financial situation where they can afford going a private route, is that an option? Are there places that can do more private type of work for this?
Yeah, absolutely. There are places that can do private surgeries.
Mm.
Pretty expensive, but there are some people who seek surgeries outside of medical services plan.
And I think one thing that I really noticed when I was in your clinic is there was such a almost hand in hand was challenges with going through the gender affirming care, but also some like of the mental health difficulties that a lot of these patients faced. I saw that you were almost doing both concurrently in almost majority of your patients. Does that sound correct? And I guess I would hoping if you could speak a little bit more on that and like what you've noticed in your clinic and what type of stresses these patients deal with.
Yeah, there's a whole range of mental health issues that trans and gender diverse people face. I mean, there are many who are thankfully very well adjusted and well supported. And I think that especially for youth, the number one, I would say, indicator or factor that ensures their their mental health and well-being is the support of their families.
Yeah.
There's a lot of excellent data and some research that came out of Toronto actually that shows how important that is, parental and family supports. But there are many who don't have those supports and have concurrent mental health issues. And yeah, it's of utmost importance that they have the kind of supports that they need in order to navigate transition and access care.
Yeah. Would you say it's mostly like lack of family support that tends to be one of the biggest stressors for these individuals, or is it bullying at school? Like, what do you think is like, or is it, I guess, of course it could be a mix of all of them, but what do you think tends to weigh the heaviest?
I think for youth, absolutely. If you compare groups of youth who have supportive, loving families to those who don't, the rates of depression and suicide are far, far, far greater in the group of youth that are not supported. In those that are supported, they are higher for sure, but certainly comparable to their cisgender peers. Yeah. And if you have the support of your family, of course, when you encounter bullying at school, mm-hmm. you've got someone at your back, to support you. But certainly trans individuals and gender diverse people encounter a lot of discrimination and violence. Yeah. And that can absolutely contribute to increased rates of suicide for sure. And that is still a very real problem, a very big problem.
For sure. And just from, I had a previous episode where we discussed mental health, and one tip I can provide to the listeners is there's a program called Bounce Back through the Canadian Mental Health Association, and that's a free resource that they can use. And it kind of, so they can talk to someone and sort of get back on their feet in terms of mental health support. Is there anything that you tend to recommend to your patients in terms of kind of regaining control over their mental health?
I absolutely would agree with that. For youth that are suffering from mental health issues, but even for those who are generally